Episode 319, here we are, day 17 of No News November. It is currently October. That's all you need to know.
No, that's all you know, motherfucker. What day is it today?
Today is Wednesday. The reason why I know today is Monday is because I'm here talking to you. Today's the 18th.
18th, okay.
Yeah.
Are you sure about that?
Because, yeah.
Okay.
My computer wouldn't lie to me. Microsoft wouldn't lie to me.
Okay. Nice.
Papa Microsoft. We're now owned by.
Just checking how much you are still among us.
I'm always
the living
among
people.
Us. I'm very sussy. Always just
you are
one stop away. See, that's what the lore. That's what the people don't know is they don't know the internal Discord lore of the Among Us documents.
Oh, yeah.
The meta. Just I don't know. We were first to the train. Okay, we were trendsetting.
We were min maxing for sure.
We were min-maxers till the day we die. Here we are. There's a lot of news, but also not a lot of news. A lot of things that I think Yiska's definitely been talking about for months now, it feels like, that, you know, without any information, teams really can't do anything. But still, somehow, teams are still managing to do things. So we'll get into who's staying, who's leaving, who's still employed. Maybe talk a little World Cup stuff. We'll get into Flaming Yiska on Hills to Die On later, because again, he probably doesn't have anything for me, because my takes are immaculate. My takes are just pristine.
No, your just takes are glowing, always baby. Like, you're not sitting on the fence, you're shoving it deep up your glut, okay? Like, you're the ultimate fence setter, and have been for several years.
This is true. It is a habit that was difficult to unlearn, but we're slowly...
That's another thing in
crawling out of it.
That's another Discord lore thing. It's both sides, Joel.
It's true. I believe I had a fence emote named after me for a time. I think it was promptly deleted because it was heretical in the Lord's name. But that said, we do have to thank some patron producers and YouTube members who still make the show possible. If you can't necessarily support us monetarily, you can support us by leaving a comment, downloading the podcast, all that stuff really, really helps. So 319 is brought to you by Battle Crab, Refine, Bean, Bronze, Babu, Hal, Picasso, Lulshin, Porkchop, Sammy, Rex, Zane, Volumelon, Sugar High, and our YouTube members, Blave, Bliss, IMDRW, Brother, Adam L, Ice Angel, Fire Element 6, and AK. NYXL, first team on the block, they're all gone. Anything about this even remotely surprising? Yes,
it's not surprising, but I guess while we're here, I think we can talk about like how this franchise actually probably is a little bit underrated in the types of contributions that it has made to the Overwatch scene.
Okay, yeah.
In that it started out being probably the best team in Season 1.
Yeah.
It had probably the best branding. It has consistently had the best announcement trailers. Has consistently True. Put in production there. And at the very least, they always had intelligent approaches towards roster building in a way that was to push forward where the scene might see the most value. So if you recall, and once again... Like, I did this before, but, like, this is where I completely am on the wrong side of the of history. When XL2 came along and they wanted to have sure. players from the tri-state area, I was one of those guys that really said, like, this is... I was way beyond, like, what one should have in a reaction in that moment. And mm-hmm. because I saw, like... some of those players being ousted, right? Or replaced. Realistically, it wasn't just by nobodies, right? I remember Mira was, I think, one of those guys that were around, like a couple of pretty good players, decent players. Yeah. I'd have to look it up. So the idea to, you know, the criticism of a lot of the audiences or the people that never got into Overwatch League always has been, how should I develop a connection to a team of whose players... whose players have zero connection, right. maybe even language connection to the city. So they tried to make that work. It never really worked that well. But it was worth a try. And then this year, they first looked at a potential of a marginalized gender roster in order to see if that could be competitive, and that would be pushing the envelope. And then when they realized, by the way, I think by the time we found out, I'll just say this now, by the time this was reported, it was already on the chopping block. They reacted towards the insider feedback pretty well and adjusted and built a roster that had some developmental qualities and tied those in more into a system that realistically had a pretty good season. Like, low-key, not a bad season at all, right? Yeah.
They remained the worst.
They remained in contention for play-ins. They had upset potential here and there. They were at least mildly exciting. And it was like a direction where you could think this is helpful towards bring value to this system. So in that regard, once again, they kept the dope trailers and everything in shape. They had the biggest roster, I think, in the Overwatch League with their players, or among the biggest.
Definitely among the biggest. They definitely had like a deeper roster for sure.
They built a hybrid roster. So in that regard, like they did a lot right. It, just the success failed, and maybe a little bit the oomph of like really finding a story that resonates and being accepted as such by the community. I think had they had more success, that would have probably naturally followed. But once again, like in esports, fortunately, we're at the point where you probably, where winning is accurately rewarded. But yeah, like I you still have to commend them for their envelope pushing approaches to bringing value to the system and analyzing what this scene might need. And when they're going a little too far, they pull back usually.
Yeah, no, I think I'm mostly agree there. I think this is definitely a franchise that probably should feel or is righteous in feeling kind of the most hard done by. When you look at the springboard that they've had, that they had coming out of season one, you know, getting LW Blue, landing Jonak, him being the MVP, getting that MVP skin, like, eyes were on New York. Yes, they didn't perform in playoffs all that great, but like, we're a fantastic team throughout season one, and should have and had all the markings to be one of the biggest brands. Somebody who I thought, coming from a non-endemic point of view, felt like they were doing it right. They were adding all these like super high production budget content pieces. They're trying to showcase the players as best they could. Like, it was, they felt like they were doing it right. Yes, as Overwatch kind of progressed, health kind of deteriorated. You can't necessarily justify putting that budget, that same level of budget out there. And yeah, New York now kind of exits the league as the league kind of quietly rolls over and dies. It's kind of just a footnote rather than like a capstone, which it probably should have been. And that's where it's like, dang, New York probably could have done really, really great things. I think their creative director probably needs to have a job literally anywhere. I think whoever that was, I don't know names, but whoever was in charge of their content was fantastic.
I agree. It just felt like the org was always lacking a face. There was nobody really to attach to after season one.
Yes, after season one, season two, yeah, it was kind of, it was tough. But that's like a lot of criticism you can levy to a lot of franchises, where it's just like, yeah, a lot of teams were just kind of like in and out. Had a lot of the same faces, just kind of like very milk toast,
right?
I don't know.
Like, at least they had some. Like, it's not like they.
At least they did.
I think that's fair. Just did a lot behind the scenes. There was never really anyone coming on for interviews or,
yeah.
You know, like players did, but like for instance, like just general manager Nugget was usually just like behind the scenes pulling strings there. I think that was, maybe it's just me, but like it was hard to put a face to it. While,
okay,
like when I look at the Florida Mayhem, when we did this Learning to Win again,
yep,
video. What I basically meant is the organization or Albert is learning that,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And Albert is a very front-facing general manager
mm-hmm.
And is a ton of value that way. And that's also true for a lot of general managers in the league that sort of became part of the brand and provided some accountability, some behind-the-scenes looks, a face to the org that had some stability to it. And I think that's like maybe the one thing where had they had a like really presentable face that consistently communicated with the league at all times or with the mm-hmm. fan bases, I think they could have had a little bit more of a familiar brand type deal. But maybe that's just me. Like my position also sort of shapes that to be the likely reading here, just because like I interact with the general managers a lot. So yeah,
sure, of course. And I think I would agree that having a position like GM in the Overwatch League, being a very flexible position, very like open to interpretations, everybody's, you know, job, I think across the league is slightly a little bit different from each other's. But it does feel like the most sticky, if that makes sense, where it's like, you're not necessarily super tied to the roster, so you have at least some like stability. So it's almost like who of you to be forward facing. And we kind of saw that eventually kind of spring up, obviously, like as difficult as it probably was as the team moved to Asia. But Tasmo famously very front facing for the Dallas Fuel, a historic figure in the scene. Everybody kind of like associates him with the Fuel, I think, at this point. I think Pre did a great job both on the Justice and on Boston, being a little bit more forward-facing than most GMs. Not too many others, I would say, that really like tried to really make an effort of like getting out there and like trying to like wrangle the narrative or just be that forward-facing. Obviously, you know, Albert obviously is one. I think Seffy was one in the past. Like, it is difficult and it's incredibly thankless, but yeah, I think it's definitely something that New York could have utilized a little bit more with their like very, very good like marketing resume. They did, if they had a face that wasn't just a player, as much as I feel like you'd want it to be a player, but also it's really difficult in esports to have like that, like franchised player. It's really, 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 really hard, especially in this game, to like just keep a player around. Like, there's not too many players that can just be good for like patches on seasons on years. Like, it's that's just really, really hard to find that player and then also keep them under contract. So it probably needs to be a member of staff. So yeah, I could agree with that. I think the more that I think about it, the more that I'm like, yeah, New York. I think a lot of teams did lose like lack of face, but if there was ever a missed potential or missed opportunity, New York's probably it. Sad to see the entire roster kind of get shipped to orbit again. Really dope send off for those players. Speaking of this roster, I saw a couple people on Reddit. I did kind of want to pick through some of this roster a little bit and throw you some curveballs. I did see somebody on Reddit talk about Fitz's kind of legacy as a hitscan player. Obviously the season was not fantastic, but it wasn't terrible. So like, where do you think Fitz sits in like the hierarchy of like hitscans all time?
Pretty high, I think.
Okay.
I feel like especially the first 2 years he was in the league, he was like,
sure,
top two, but top three player. Of course, like it went down a little bit as more great hitscans also hit the league.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I don't know, like his time in Seoul specifically was, he was sometimes inconsistent, you have to say, but at the end of the day, like he still, like Profits was for a while like a menace to deal with, so not sure if he's first ballot, but he's close, I think.
Okay, let me it is difficult, and I feel like this is a future episode as we enter day maybe 24 of having no news coming next week. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is something we can do, and if this is interesting to you, then, you know, please let us know and drop a comment. Maybe we can start ranking, you know, the top 10 of all time in certain subcategories.
Oh, dude.
I think that would be fun.
It would be fun. Knowing it's also so much aggregation needed.
Yeah.
That shit is so strenuous. Yeah. We can look into it. Maybe there's a better process than just coming up with it. Maybe there's a, you know, collecting opinions type of deal or something.
Maybe.
Or getting more people on to evaluate that. Because, like, if I have to rack my brain and go through stats of, like, 6 seasons in order to accurately aggregate, that's...
I know exactly who we can bring on for that. Okay. And we will talk about that after the show. But that's for a different... That's for after the show. Fitz, though, I do... My gut says I'm hesitant to kind of put him within the top 10, but that is just because I can't think of, like, all of, like, the best hit scans, you know what I mean? I think he's a really, really good player. I think I'm a little hindsight biased because I didn't think he had a great season this year. Yeah, I don't know. Good player. Was he a great player? Yeah, I think he had his moments. I really have to go back and see. I think it's not
Lip and Ants, but it's also hard to come up with. I think, okay, Fitz or Kai?
Fitz or Kai? Ooh. That's a tough one. I think I'd take Kai. Do I like Kai's Widow? Yes. Do I like Kai's Soldier? I think they're maybe a little equal on Sojourn, but maybe that's like hindsight of last season. I think it's close. That's a good, you started with a really good benchmark. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's pretty similar.
Yeah.
But I'll give you a name that I would slam above Fitz that I think is like super hot for people. I think Sparker is criminally underrated on that list.
I think I would have Fitz higher.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, the man saw a grand final and, like, won a stage as well, right?
He did. Just, like, on the breadth of heroes, it's just not.
Here's the thing. Like, while you were saying this, it's kind of interesting. Okay, this is a stupid thing to say, but, like, I'll just throw it at you.
Hell, then you tell me. Yeah, let's get it.
Is Sombra a hitscan character?
See, I always categorize those, and this is my own maybe weird idiosyncrasy, but I look at them as like flankers. She technically is a hitscan. The way her gun works is hitscan.
Right.
But I don't consider her like the mid to long range hitscan players you kind of naturally think of.
You think like hitscan are like the, not the tracking heroes, but like the flick aim heroes, right? Like
I would consider Soldier, fair.
Like a little bit more longer range. But I say this is like some of the best hitscan players in the world are also some of the best Sombra players, mainly Lip. Right, so
sure,
it's the archetype that a hitscan has to have a Sombra in the same way that a flex DPS has to have a Tracer.
I don't think so. I think it's definitely like added credit that you can give them. That is like something that sits them apart, and definitely something that Fitz, like historically, you can kind of rest your head on and saying that Fitz was like a solid Sombra prior to like Lip kind of shattering the ceiling and really, you know, reaching to the heights of that, you know, what the hero could really bring. Also, shout out to Spilo, who like basically confirmed all of our suspicions that the new Sombra is hot garbage. We will have to bring him on to get a better look because, yeah, that seemed really kind of. I think we both had like sneaking suspicions that like this was really weird. But regardless, Fitz is. I think he could be up there. I think this is one of those things that's like. It's the reverse of every team's a playoff team where it's like, I don't know. Like, I'm not sure exactly where I'd put him. Maybe he falls in the top 10. Again, that's all time, too. Like, okay, here, let me throw this at you. Does Pine make the all-time top 10 list?
No.
You don't think so?
No, not close.
Really?
No, not top 20.
Dude, that feels heretical.
Dude, my man's played like 12 games in season
he,
one.
Okay, fuck yes, he did. It wasn't like the biggest sample size.
Nah, that's crazy. That's just like how much room he has in your noggin, okay? Like this man.
That's
like,
true. That's true.
It's like.
He Bro, might he did some crazy shit. To be fair, homie could came.
Yeah, but like he probably played less Hitscan games than Corey.
Also, shout out Corey, homie. That slept on, never really got the opportunities that he probably should have in this game. I don't actually know what he's up to in Valorant. That's something I'm actually interested.
Not sure
in.
Either.
Another person. Speaking of somebody who never really got the opportunities. Bro, Shockwave never got a chance.
That's true.
I'm just going to put that out there. He consistently shafted.
Which is fucking crazy to say, because this man has been on, what, 4 Overwatch League teams now?
4 Overwatch League teams, and I feel like he started on, like, one
chance.
Of them.
Yeah.
I mean, he's
actually
start. Wild.
It's not just about starting, but, like, when this career could have really taken off, that's just, like, yeah. A pandemic suddenly hits. You gotta yep. just, like... expect to have done something horrible in the past life, like
honestly, bro, you are at the bottom of the karmic ladder. Shout outs to Shockwave, because yeah, no, it is too bad that somebody did not pull a trigger on like a fully EU or at least Western roster, because I really do feel like Psycho and like the same kind of way, like I think he had his moments. I think like that a fully Western roster for that team in particular, for New York as a core. Mm-hmm. Probably would have worked really well if we still play within the logic that like OG becomes like available. You know what I mean? I think you could really kind of have like a competitive-ish roster come play-ins, if not a little bit more competitive, because I think we have enough evidence points at this point to really look at Kellen and be like, yeah, it just ain't it. Whatever it was in the preseason, whatever it was last year, whatever it was throughout the whole year, getting reverse swept by the Shock. Mm-hmm. Everybody remembers the Havana last play where homies shattering walls and just throws. It just wasn't it, you know?
Sometimes I wonder what would have happened if Shock had picked up someone like Kellen instead.
Do you think him like in a fully Korean team, it changes?
I think this season proved that the rookie class of last year was pretty good, and that combine that with tanks looking only as good as their supports, and combine that with
okay, I see where you're going.
Him being like kind of stable, and also contrast that to how rookies did this year. I feel like it's at least interesting to entertain what might have been had they had someone like Kellen, who I think I perceive to be a little bit more stable. Okay. Maybe completely wrong take, but it would have been interesting just because he also has a Winston, right? Like the main tanks would have been covered more safely, I think. And given like that with everything, yeah, the what ifs are interesting here.
It's definitely it is interesting. I've always prescribed this season's Shock, the 2023 San Francisco team, as headless.
Mm-hmm.
They just did not seem like they had like a leader, and I feel like that was Violet's role. And with Violet gone, with Proper kind of taking the reins, but also trying to be the hard carry, like that just
who knows, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but Joe, I wanted to get your ES code canceled, so I'm asking you, Fitz or Hisu?
Oh, they're both so, like, tame. I'll take Hisu just because he...
Really?
Or recently had a little bit more... Yeah, I think, like...
Recently,
well, was it last
wait,
year?
Like, this man just shat the bed all season, right?
I'm not gonna lie, I watched maybe a total of, like, 2 Shanghai games.
Based.
I'm gonna keep it a buck with you. That was a non-starter. I was not watching that. I think there were moments on Toronto that I was like, bro, Hisu is an absolute bot, but then he like would play Sombra or no, he would play Sombra, and I'd be like, bro, what is Hisu doing? Like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, he's throwing his, like, there's a couple, like, just complete whiffs of EMPs where he's, like, doing, like, the old Libero trick where, like, he would throw his translocator, he would invest translocator into the EMP, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. he would engage with translocator instead of using it to disengage, and they would just miss. Or he would, like, throw his translocator, and they would just be, like, in really odd positions. But then he would, like, play Sojourn and just, like, will Toronto through some fights. And I'm like, okay, this kid can fucking aim. Like, he's an aimer. Yeah, I would say Hisu. It's close. That's another, like, good one where I'm like, yeah, kind of similar hero pool. I like Fitz. When I think of Fitz, I think of, like, Cassidy. I think of Ash. His Sojourn was, like, you know, B plus, B, you know, in that kind of, like, Western grading, like, in a B tier. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think Hisu could, like, was punching upwards to A and had, like, a little bit. I felt like he had a little bit more consistency in playmaking potential. It didn't feel like Fitz was the same player after Soul. Is that fair to say? Obviously, sure. Not the same caliber of teammates.
Sure.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Hard to say. It is a good question. It is something that I'm very interested to explore. Really looking at those all-time lists. Yeah, New York. Sad to see him go. It's going to be fun kind of walking through memory lane for a lot of these teams.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not the only one that has disembarked the Overwatch League. The Los Angeles Valiant, all their players gone. Anything there?
No. Did you know that Faustus was part of that team?
I did not. That is not shocking because I think he has some ties to some of those players, but yeah, I don't think that was, like, publicly announced.
Yeah. I mean, for the Orc, you know, rest in piss.
Orc, yeah.
To the players, hopefully you guys find, like, some follow-up teams or rethink, like, involvement in collegiate and whatnot. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, like, for the resources that you had, really solid season. Of course, also what came out for in the prior seasons on Valiant. Did you read that No Hill post, Joe?
No.
Dude.
Unreal. Rough.
Yeah, unreal. Like, if people are interested, there's a translations thread somewhere on Reddit. You should be able to find it by searching for No Hill. But it was like
Was this the one where he was alleging that, like, he was, like, trying to get people paid, and then, like, the payments are always late, so he's paying them out of pocket.
Yeah, and, like, they were paying taxes while not being paid, and then they had agreed to sign Eileen, but they couldn't finance the $70 transportation fee for him to come to the house, so they couldn't join, stuff like this. It's the saddest stuff.
That's wild.
Yeah.
And that's where it's, like, that's where I think I revisit a lot of the conversations that, like, the three of us had with Avril. Where it's like, all right, who is really at fault? Yes, I think there is some culpability for IGC and Valiant as a whole.
Mm.
But when you do kind of move the team into a new region, have this operating partner that you hope is operating above board, and it just sounds like they weren't.
Yeah.
Is the blame more on them? Is it shared? I'm more of the ilk to say that it's a little bit more shared than just, like, blaming Valiant and IGC.
Sure.
But it just sucks all around that, you know, a team that probably could have been solid and a brand that, like, had some legs. You know, you want to talk about, like, some of the most memorable stuff. You know, we don't have the in and out incident without Valiant. We don't have the making the Titans seem mortal in season 2 without the Sombra goats stuff. You know, it is a historic brand. Also, shout outs to Tezande. And it's sad to see them again be another footnote from such a strong, like, early season performance or early franchise performance.
Yeah. Everything that came after packing is just symbolic, and everyone involved, like, at the management level, should just be deeply ashamed of letting that transpire. I don't even really care about the financials. What is coming forward that just should not happen in esports. We're past that. Even in the darkest of esports winters.
Oh, yeah.
Given, like, what if what Norhill or half of what Norhill claims is true, yeah, just like indefensible. And then, I mean, this season, of course, like these players could live at home. Like their living situation at least wasn't as big of an issue, but like so many managerial duties just like completely missed. And yeah, just symbolic. I don't know.
Yep. 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 It's definitely, it definitely feels like a big regression. And that's something that, with whatever comes next in 2024, something that I think we're going to have to remember, that, you know, logistics and managerial duties are incredibly important. Yeah. And you can't just give somebody 15 different teams and expect them to like manage them appropriately.
People don't understand, but like so many combustions this season can directly be traced back to the general managers of those respective teams being called to managing Valorant teams or something.
Yep. Yep.
They are a backbone. Team managers are a backbone to a healthy environment that works, and players can in an unencumbered way practice and improve. And when those guys are absent, it's almost immediately felt when there's an understaffing at the highest level, and that directly translates into franchise performance. It's kind of interesting to see how much it does, but it definitely like definitely directly, like, for those that have insight into that world, I think it's just immediately apparent.
Yep. No, I would totally agree. And this, it echoes a lot of the stuff that it felt like, weirdly enough, Immortals was kind of embodying prior to the League era. Like, I remember, who was it? Hold on. I'm actually going to live. No, it wasn't. No. It was one of their coaches. I want to say it was Arrow. I don't remember.
Huh? What are you talking about? Immortals.
There was, I remember interviewing somebody. Was it on Immortals? It could have been. I want to say it was Arrow. I could be wrong. But they were like very much trying to like integrate mindfulness in like in coaching, which I thought was very like,
I don't think it was Arrow, but I know who you're talking about.
You know who you're talking about. Yeah. I can't remember exactly who it was. I want to say it was on Immortals. This is again prior to the League itself.
Yeah.
It seemed like it had more, and there again, it's different management, I believe now. So
yeah, I mean,
different ownership and stuff
back then. Like, I remember Grim Reality and Agilities were still doing like schooling and stuff, and the org was really engaged and trying to, you know, make that work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And the contrast to now is just,
it's staggering. Yeah. It is definitely appalling. And it sucks too, because they, I think they moved locally. I think they're in the Great Lakes region, which is up here in Michigan. So, or at least around here. So it's sad to see that, if there was going to be a home team for me, it's fucking IGC. Which I'm not thrilled about. So let's go Renegades. Shout outs to the real ones who remember the Detroit Renegades. was a thing. Just saying. Valiant, yes, they're gone. Another team with a weird amount of departures, but some keepers. The Washington Justice say goodbye to Ben Best, Mira Donghun, and Get Amazed. However, they have activated their player options for Alpha Yi, Flora, Teru, and Danny was, I believe, the assistant head coach, something like that. Let's start with the departures. Do any of those surprise you? I feel like Mirror had quite a good season.
Yeah.
Does that kind of shock you that they would let go of Mirror? Is that just more of a, you know, too much of a question? Okay.
No, it's just, realistically, it's just a way his contract is structured against the others, and like that makes it probably less opportune. I don't think he particularly performed less well. I think the one that we want to retain is Alpha Yi. The other other guys all don't have trade value at this point in time.
It is kind of surprising that they would keep Teru. I didn't think he was particularly fantastic.
Yeah, I think that weirdly this enough, is all down to the contract structures they probably have okay. in place, and that's
less of the players, more of the contracts.
I also don't necessarily think that this move communicates a willingness to stay in the Overwatch League.
Okay.
I think it's a little bit more complicated, but we'll see how this develops. Maybe I'm totally wrong, and during the vote, they will have like a yes vote. I'd be immensely surprised if that was the case, though. As I would be with many franchises, to be fair, at this point.
Sure. It is very shocking to see that anybody's activating any kind of contracts, unless, like you're saying, it is very advantageous to do so. It just seems really hard to want to spend more money on a game that we don't know will exist in a year, at least competitively speaking. So, looking at the Justice's legacy, is there much to say? Is there
The legacy is that they're probably the second worst franchise in Overwatch League history after the Toronto Defiant.
Oh, wow. Okay. In league history, second worst.
If you want to count,
yeah,
I think like season win rates, Valiant still trumps just because their season one was so good.
Yeah, season one. Season two wasn't terrible.
They won a stage. Of course, like, actually scratch that. Valiant just on virtue of the last couple of years just like has to be last.
They just take last.
But everyone else definitely had more success, right, than this team on paper.
Yeah. Even Paris also had like a good little run.
I think it's also fair to say like they rarely, like other than the John Galt roster that year and the Wizard Young roster,
okay,
they didn't really underperform under the resources. They just like played wherever they accurately fit with their resources. Sometimes they punched up a little bit in terms of the formation of the roster, and then it just didn't come to be. Like,
yeah.
But what you put in is what you get in this game, right? Like, investment is very, like, with some exceptions around the edge cases of early seasons and whatnot.
Sure.
In like roster cost and investment and infrastructural investment and all that goes into it is correlated with wins. And if I think it's probably realistic to say that this team outperformed resources pretty reliably over the seasons. Not massively so, not in any way, shape, or form like the Mayhem, for instance, did this year.
Sure.
Like how the Spitfire have done for
have
2 years.
Done. Yeah.
But like once again, like I think like the Justice definitely has to be above Toronto in that regard, because Toronto always had
paid
well. Of course, there's something to be considered about the Canadian taxes that have to be sort of put on top for players to consider your offer, because like whatever is their post-tax is what they judge your offer on, not what the flat amount is, right? So, that's also fair. That should be taken into account. But yeah, I don't know. Like, they didn't want to win a stage title, right?
Yep.
They were sometimes competitive, but also sometimes just like very bad misjudgments and ability to adjust in specifically season two, I would say.
Debut season.
Yeah, like. What was the season 3 roster like? I forgot.
That was the Otto. I was just looking at that. Hold on, I'll read it to you. Yeah. I'm sorry. It wasn't Otto. That was Tuba, Stitch, Decay, Roar, Janu, Arc, Aim God.
Wasn't too bad. Yeah, I don't know. Like,
not a terrible roster. 19th. Yeah. 4 wins.
Yeah, there's a world where I don't know what, like, the hardware they had was always like much past their resources. So I'm inclined to say that at least the front office did their job, but like they always seem to be something that make that team not perform up to its potential, specifically the season was it four Rasta with?
Yes, that was the Mag. Woeful roster.
Yeah,
that's your sweet ass. It was Jerry Decay, Tuba, Assassin, Mag, Fury, Closer, Bebe. Like, come on, you have like living legends on that team. How do you not do anything?
Yeah, and that's I think that's just like, you can definitely question coaching and or like how much the Orc required everyone else to or was able to keep everyone else like on task. So once again, you see what you put in is what you get out, and in the end, like if you just look strictly at win rate, I think they are the second least winning franchise.
Yeah, I think that would check out definitely. I think that season, season four is probably the most successful. Let's take a look.
I think so.
Total of 9 wins, completely mid, ranked 10th by end of season. This season, they ended with 6. So
where were they in season 5?
Season 5, they were. Pause, hold. 9th, 11th, and 13th.
Okay, so that's the best.
Not terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Decay Assassin, Kalios, Krillin opener. Yeah. Oh, that was like the Magda Boston, Ty Dolla, Vigilante. Oh god. Another player who just criminally just benched forever. Never got a chance. Transferred happy. Yeah. This is where everybody was concerned that like they weren't gonna field a roster, right? Everything was going south for them.
Yeah. Oh well.
What a team. A team of all time, as the kids say. However, you did bring up another team that did part ways with the roster. Toronto Defiant. Everybody's gone. Hydron, Spectra, Kaluge, Ultraviolet, Surmaged, Opener, and No Hill.
Consorus is being kept around, right? So
Consorus is being kept around. Is that another one of those just like, you know, it's upside for the org that he has a good contract, we can keep him around. Maybe we can move him around other games if we wanted. Like, what's the deal there? What do you think?
I think there are a lot of qualities that Consorus has that are worth keeping around. So
does it involve weightlifting?
No. For one, okay. He's pretty well educated as far as I'm aware. I think he has a graduate degree.
Okay.
And it's pretty versatile in what he can do. I also think this organization for the longest time has yearned for stability in the coaching position.
Yeah.
And if you find someone that you believe in, might as well keep on depending on like that. Like what this says is like, we're keeping you for another month and then we will see, right? Like it's not they're keeping like, or maybe he has a contract that's guaranteed, who knows, right? But
hard to say.
What I think this doesn't surprise me too much. I think that's also a guy that has performance coach qualities on top. Like he just understands how teams are supposed to work. So I assume in a multi-gaming organization like the Overactive Media is, or rather with Mad Lions and whatnot, and the Ultra, I think it's just like really easy for them to have him provide value elsewhere in the organization.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I definitely think he could be useful for any of those teams. I think he's like not only just incredibly articulate, but like you said, has a lot of experience that he can add to a roster, right? Like he could probably find something useful for any team, even in a game that he's not super familiar with. I think he's pretty well equipped. I think all things considered, had a good debut at head coach, I'd say. I don't think this was necessarily a bad showing, especially with how close they were to actually making a playoff run. So
I mean, yeah, that match against Boston was one of the most brutal. Yeah. Like you basically had it, right? That's really sad. Especially the Orc did such a good job with the finals that they really deserve to showcase their team there. Unfortunate that I think like you have to win the Boston game. I'm not sure about the London game. I think there's a little bit of a rock, paper, scissors situation going on.
I would say so, yeah. It was really hard for them to do anything versus London. And yeah, that game versus Boston was very winnable. And we saw how Boston did at playoffs. It was not, they weren't slouches. You know, they competed. They were in the running. So, a team that could have, you know, that took Boston close. Yeah, could have been Toronto instead of Spitfire. That's for sure. Could have been the both of them, to be fair.
Yeah. I think, like, generally speaking, like, I think I'm also past, like, condemning this team for, like, their lack of success or their midness. I think that's a lame meme at this point. What you can say is, what they contributed as a brand and as an in their ability to attract fans. In their enthusiasm to what, like, as much as they are probably one of the instrumental parties in kicking this process of dissolving the Overwatch League off, as far as if what Jacob Wolf reported is true, that they were leading the efforts to sort of unite with the help of this law firm and get the teams together in order to kick this process off. As much as that might just have kicked the ball, and to be fair, like, maybe it's also a much desired or needed process, but I think they still continuously clearly signaled their commitment to this esport, and for that, that should get some respect out of this community, because yes, it is a competitive game, but it is also an endeavor in keeping this afloat and providing a platform. And they hosted multiple homestands on top of the final, and that's more than you can say for a lot of these franchises, right?
Yep.
Really didn't do jack for this league for the longest time. And if anything, if I was such a Toronto to find, I'd be kind of pissed at those guys, right?
Oh, yeah. I think there's plenty of orgs from a number of different angles. Toronto probably has the most to be frustrated about the league with, the league being, like, their peers within it. Because I remember, like, being excited for the league because, or what was it? In season one, there was, like, you know, those vouchers that teams could, like, every team had, like, the rights to, like, host two homestands. And, like, that never happened. And then we had the homestand model that was cut by COVID. And it was just, like, then there was, like, alleged reports that Boston's ownership was causing a hissy fit with merch sales. And, like, that got, homogenized. Yep. Everything about this, there was just so many, like, deadweight actors within the league. Yeah. And Toronto it said that they believed in Overwatch, and they showed that they believed in Overwatch by putting on events, by trying to engage with fans, and that's very apparent through their success in merch sales, allegedly. Mm. They reaped, again, wise words on your half. You know, you get what you put in, and if Toronto put in a lot, they didn't get necessarily the success performance wise, but they felt like they succeeded a lot of they succeeded elsewhere quite well.
This is also true for Justice, because I recall that the Justice were also the team that with the largest amount of or number of homestands theoretically that they would have hosted.
Yes, they
host two, and they would have hosted more. The maximum amount allowed,
that was like five for them, right?
Four or five, I forget what it was.
Yeah, but, which is wild.
Yeah, so, like, they also, at least from an organizational side of things, put in a good effort. So, and as far as I can tell, they had a decent sponsorship situation going on as well. So, true. from a business side, I think you can. Then again, like, I was like, you get what you put in, but at the same time, is everyone else putting too much in? You know?
Sure, yeah.
And you know how that turned out when we tried to, or when this league tried to cap what everyone was able to put in? without a players union presence, then it became a legal issue, right? So
comes the DOJ, everybody.
Like, I think it's fair to press from both sides and say, yes, you guys probably like got as much success out of this as you spent for. On the other side of things is, did everyone that got a lot, bought a lot of success, got the business deal out of it, and is your overspending part of the reason why we're here? So, you know, there's both sides of this issue for sure. So,
100%.
Yeah, it's always worth pointing out. But yeah, from a competitive side, when you put that hat on, I think both of those teams, just from a win percentage point of view, and from a lack of any silverware, you just have to call out.
Yeah, I mean, just shit performers. That said, some of the best content. I think Source Code this year was very, very good. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they just posted their, you know, goodbye video.
That was so good. I really enjoyed that one. Yeah.
I think all three parts, I think there's only three parts this season. I think all three were very candid. I think they showed a lot of internal stuff that they didn't need to, that I thought was very, like, you can, there, it was very information rich that you could, like, parse through. It was not the stereotypical, like, TSM legend style of, you know, we're going to talk at the camera for 2 seconds and then show you a bunch of gameplay and then call that a day, you know? Like, this was, there was stuff to be said. You got to look for how the players actually were, how they felt about things, what went wrong, what went right. And you got, like, some look at the coaches. You got to look, you got to hear kind of Kasaurus break down some things, especially in that second episode. So, again, credit to Toronto's content creation and creative staff. I think they killed it, and have been kind of unsung heroes of OWL content creation that really never got utilized. I don't know how some of that stuff didn't get brought up on broadcast, but maybe there was a rights issue. I don't know. But yeah, weird. Toronto, though, sad to see him go. We will see what Kasaurus means, what his contract being activated or just being not commented on means for the future of them. Another team, the Dynasty, the most successful team in league history. All the players are gone. Probe, Proper, Striker, Max, Junbin, Finn, Luke, Mino, Renko, Krusty, and 9K. All gone. All on the free agent list.
You confused Eric and because you said the Dynasty and then meant the Shock.
I was like,
confusion.
I was like,
but the Shock were a Dynasty, so it's fair.
Yeah.
The Dynasty weren't a Dynasty.
I could have framed that a little bit better and primed the, you know, Eric to go the way I was.
Well, you broke his ankles, okay?
Like, I did. I crossed him up a little bit, guys. I got him in the nooch. That's all I'm saying. Yes, San Francisco, they're all gone. Is this remotely surprising? Is there, like, I feel like maybe some of the Timmies are like, why didn't they keep Proper? Why didn't they keep Krusty? Like, is this,
okay,
does
so
it matter at this point?
Theoretically speaking, I'm not sure what kind of contract structure they would have with Proper. I think there's something to be said about signing a 2+1 with LeBron, right?
Sure.
But otherwise, this guy has been on this team for 2 years. So theoretically, if it was a standard 1+1, he'd be out of an option year by now, right? And considering the uncertainty of the league, you probably wouldn't make him a new offer during the season either. So it's a natural process of this contract running out. But that's a lot of copium. It's also very possible that they're just out. Okay.
I mean, I'll underline that. I think both those points. Non-endemic esports fans won't kind of understand this or won't be plugged into this, but this is their parent organization and NRG are new League of Legends operators. I don't know, and maybe this is me speaking out of school, but I don't know if those budgets come from the same place. I don't know if the budgets matter at all, because we know that, you know, the league is producing and providing teams with some kind of stipends. I don't have details on what that was or what that looks like. Was this fully funded and subsidized by the league? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That said, you look at two esports, one that you're just getting back into after, like, what, 8 or 10 years, something like that.
Mm.
Old heads will know.
Mm-hmm.
versus a league that is literally not making any money and on its deathbed. You know, like, where are you going to really put your money? It doesn't, I don't care if I have proper, I don't care if I have LeBron James of Overwatch or the, you know, Bill Belichick of Overwatch coaching. The game's not going anywhere. So I'm going to go put my money in the thing that is doing things. And I think NRG is going to Worlds, which is huge for them. So it's like, at least I'm pretty sure they're going to Worlds. Don't quote me.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. Actually, I think they are. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm just wrong on that. But I think they're doing well.
At least they went to
VCT. Yeah, that too, right? Like, they're doing well in other esports. Why not double down there? There's no sense. There's no reason, real reason to be here, regardless of how good we think some of their players or coaches were. So, again, it is a not as much of a footnote. Not as much of a footnote, but this season was pretty rough.
It was a rough season for sure. And there was a lot of complications early on. And we talked about those. And it's kind of sad to see how it ended.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, especially for Krusty and 9K. I think those are definitely, like, some of the, if not the best coaches, if not definitely the best coaching duo in Overwatch League history.
Is it the best duo? I don't know. Do we go Krusty 9K or do we go 9K Rush?
Just for half a, like, they just won one. No. 9K Rush is just like one part of the season. I think like winning two rings is dubs that.
Yeah, it's that dubs, but
also, of course, like, unfortunately, on the Outlaws side, Junkbug was also let go. So,
yeah.
All of that is super sad. Like, this is some of the best coaching talents left in the game. And I'm not sure, like, what these guys are thinking. Like, in part, when I was reading that Ray was already looking to Valorant, that's a move that someone makes who is a child. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Like,
you take the bag and then you try to find something else. It's not fair to anyone else on the team if you're not, you know, if you're dividing your attention, and you should probably adjust your attitude towards that and not do what it is alleged to do. But I understand having to keep your options open and trying to find the next thing and committing to that as well, especially if you have a little mouth to feed at home. So,
yep.
But yeah, for these guys, it's super sad. I wonder, like, what the future holds for them. If it's going to be in the next whatever comes after, or if we're going to see them also transition to another esport, maybe. I think, like, their skill sets. Can I just say, I think, like, understanding Overwatch is so much more complex than just about any other esport that I don't have much of a worry that those guys will strategically be able to understand any other game. And then they also excel at explaining gameplay concepts and the leadership aspect of it all. I think that it should just be, like, yes, you got to catch up, but, like, it should just be pretty straightforward for them to go into Valorant and have these FPS mechanics on lock. I don't think that. I think if anything, their specific skill set lends itself more towards that game. So they would have to fight the uphill battle. But once they're there, I think just like the natural talent that those guys have at the things that count would carry them far.
I'd say so. I think everybody thinks of like Krusty as like this like weird strategy, like collector of good talent kind of coaches. But I think from the collector point of view, I think his like scouting doesn't get enough like credit. Like, yeah, he's had some historic whiffs, but I think those weren't necessarily whiffs. Those were more development and depth adds. Whereas, you know, we don't have We don't have Striker without Krusty. We don't have a lot of the fucking names from like, what was his name? Live Research. Man remembers what the hell Krusty coached, what the name was. NC Foxes, that's right. Some of those names, again, just kind of popped up. Solid players there. Just always looking to try to beat the system in a way.
I mean, even in many ways, Violet, right? Is a disciple.
Yeah. 100%. I think he kind of has to be. I don't think anybody was looking at 02, and this is prior to 02 Blast being like very, very different. This is a team that didn't make, you know, Apex for a time and weren't very good. And I think they aligned with Ardient. They like kind of combined and did very well. But like this was not like the absolute dynasty in tier two Overwatch that O2 Blast is now. And Violet kind of was birthed from there. I think that was kind of like the beginning of that that narrative. So
right.
Yeah, I think Krusty and 9K definitely could go to Valorant and they can cook. I think if anything, and maybe this is just completely out of pocket, but I feel like Valorant's becoming way more like Overwatch than vice versa. No? It's just becoming like more about like resource trading and ability cooldowns, and I feel like that's what we do best. I feel like that's what Krusty and 9K do really, really well. You can get on the aiming perspective. You can leave that to the players, but once you get into like the strategy of like resource trading, when and how you're doing things, how to optimize things, I feel like these guys got it unlocked. So yeah, I totally agree. These guys have careers elsewhere if they want them.
Yeah.
All right. We do. Yes, I won't cross you up here, Eric. We do have to talk about the Soul Dynasty. Again, yes, Shocker, everybody's gone. Prophet, Easy Han, Belsria, Void, Krillin, Vindame, Toby, and MMA as the coaching staff. They have parted ways with the Soul Dynasty. Outside of, you know, it being sad to see the GOAT leave, and the, you know, that era of Overwatch kind of closing. Anything to say here? Any final thoughts for the dynasty?
I think like this franchise is another that probably never caught up with their aspirations. I think there was an expectation that a South Korean franchise, or the South Korean franchise for the longest time, would have to be the one to dominate.
Or would likely be the one to dominate. I mean, I don't know how many years I feel like we were always talking about or are always trying to weigh the attribute of being able to play at home.
Yeah. And then,
you know, and obviously when that got axed, it's not something you can weigh.
Yeah. And then it's like, I think they still had a really cool brand that a lot of people vibed with. So in that regard, they were pretty successful. I think they did try decently to be successful with this team. Okay. So I don't mind it from that point of view. Maybe not as much in season 6, to be fair, but like the prior seasons, they usually like tried to make a play for winning titles and had more or less success. I think specifically like season 3, it was reasonably close. I'd like to live in a parallel universe where Gesture's career is more stable.
Sure, yeah.
And he has more like which main tank remains super stable throughout the, like a Smurf type of career.
Sure.
That would be super dope. But yeah, alas, unfortunately, like, yeah, it's the home to one of the greatest players.
Yep.
Debatably GOAT. And for that, I think there's a lot. They did a lot right. They did a lot of branding rights. They did a lot of initial investment rights in terms of like getting the Lunatic High core on and bringing that excitement over and that energy. And in that regard, they did a lot for the league. They just never really found the big success other than that one stage title I think they got as a... Was one, right? Was it more?
I remember them losing to Dragons. I think they got the stage title because it was like a big deal that they hung up like the star in the Gen G offices, right? Let's see, where was that? And they win a stage. Let's see, playoffs, regular season, kickoff clash against Philly. Ah, yes, the old chokeroo. Good old Philly Fusion in 2022, kicking off the season with a silver medal. Getting absolutely clobbered. Another masterclass from Profit. A great final to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Not in terms of a parody example, but just if you want to watch some good, just good clean Overwatch, that's a good one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Would echo a lot of the same points. And you brought up Gesture, much in the same way that we were talking about, like, fits. Like, I feel like a main tank tier list all time probably is something to explore. Do you think that Gesture or somebody like let's start with Gesture. Do you think Gesture makes the top 10
all time Overwatch League or all time?
I want to do all time. I'm tired. Like, the Overwatch League's dead. It's dying. It's over. We don't have to stick within the confines. We are capable of going all time.
I think he's probably an edge case. Probably not.
Okay.
If I'm just going down, like, you would. Is it main tanks or tanks?
I would say main tanks. I think I want to do like the subcategories.
Okay. So Smurf number one. Super number two.
Probably. I can't say for sure, but yeah, he's definitely on the list. He's up there for sure.
I'm just spitballing, just right? Spitballing. Like, I'm just,
sure. That's fair. I don't hate that.
Manu number three.
Yeah, all time, not just league. I would agree.
Gushue number four.
I would probably say Fissure, but I think Gusha is not a terrible one.
I would probably put Gusha over Manu, maybe even.
Okay, yeah, I don't hate that.
Do we have any grand misses?
So far?
Fate is in there.
Yeah, you kind of have to put Fate in there. All time. I don't hate that.
No, I'm not saying.
Go ahead,
name.
Say it.
No, I think you have to put Gesture over Sado. Do you? Maybe Gesture is top 10. Yeah, could be the case.
I think he kind of has to be when you look at like all time the success that he had Apex Season 4.
It was only 4 though, right? Like you can't totally overrate like this half year tournament, or not even half a year. But I also like would have to look at names. I feel like I'm big misses. What else is? Mag is up there for sure.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's lower on the list, but yeah, I think you probably put him on there. Skill alone. But it's tough. It's tough to like think about. I think main tanks are a little bit more scarce just because there's not a ton of like consistent success, and the ones that are consistently successful, you just kind of jam at the top. Like Smurf, easy one. Super easy, like 2, 3, 4. Any of those positions feel strong. Mono is up there. Gesture up there. Fissure's probably on the list. Here, I'm going to throw you a name, and I want to get a visceral reaction based on his experience and consistently to find a starting a contract in the Overwatch League and some success prior to the league. Does Chongsik get a vote?
Hell no. Hell no. Hell no. Actually, like, what I was thinking about is, like, my recency bias avoiding ass is trying a lot to not consider anyone from season 5, season 6. I think, like, at this point, like, if you really look into it and also take into account what he did with Team CC, someone has to be in there, in top 10 of all time.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it's all time. I think that we can consider contenders in some capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I would say. Yes, I think I'd probably position him a little lower just because it's a smaller.
Yeah,
like,
but like if you start with Chongsik, dude, like I gotta.
It was more of a joke, and it was more of like, bro, he does kind of like pop up randomly sometimes in the league. So
I mean,
it's kind of funny.
Also, Sadu is over Chongsik for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Agreed.
Who am I missing?
Dude, this is another thing, and there's a part of me that wants to create content on the historic bans that we've, or like the player punishments, or like the fines, like collecting like a history of fines for the Overwatch League. Does everybody remember that Sada was banned for fucking 30 games?
Yeah, that was crazy long.
Is that not fucking wild to remember that homie was unironically benched for 30 games?
That
and
dude,
some of the shit.
That dude just like, ran away from a duel in Hardcore WoW.
He really did.
For the listeners that don't know, like in Hardcore WoW, if you die, your character is permanently dead. And
yes,
there's a
yes.
duel to the dead mechanic where one of the duelists will die. But sometimes if someone accepts and they feel like they're losing, they will run out of the or lock out or run out of the zone and they will get a debuff for 72 hours that practically renders the character useless.
Useless.
And it's not a debuff that decays while you're locked out. So you have to be locked in for 72 hours.
It's 3 days in-game time.
Based.
Before you can play the character again, which is, I think, a successful punishment.
Yeah. So you get Sado'd, basically.
You honestly got Sado'd. Homie got his career cut. Because we wanted to be the NFL and levy heavy punishments. But suddenly, a couple seasons later, everybody's, you know, not trying to punish people out in the open. Everybody's trying to do it behind closed doors, which take that
bumper
however you want.
Bumper has to be in there. At some point, Hadi is coming up.
I think you could probably... Hadi would be a little bit lower on the list.
The thing is,
Fraggy,
like...
Fraggy, no.
Yeah, the alternatives is, like, I'm thinking about Rhea and shit. You know, like, the absolute...
Yeah, well, Rhea was
middies
a
fucking... that just, like... Rio, sorry.
Oh, Rio.
That just stuck around forever and, like, didn't stand out whatsoever, right? Like, you're now on, just on consistency getting these people in. Because, like, honestly, it's, like, main tanks... It's hard. It's a hard role, apparently. It's like hard to stick around.
It is
Fearless. Jesus Christ.
Oh,
we didn't say
there
fearless.
It is. Yep. No, that's a head ass take. Finish your drink if you are waiting for us to say fearless, because that's a bingo.
Oh my god.
We swung and missed on that one.
Oh my god, my
that's
my
a head. Top fiver right there.
Oh, my head just hit my forehead at Mac 3, dude. Like, whew. Just.
You want a fun one?
Right.
What about Panker?
Dude, stop. What about Kaiser? Panker. This man said Panker. What about Reiner?
Hey, Reiner could have been in the running, bro.
Yeah, could have been.
He could have been.
If he stuck around, for
sure. He's a contender, man. He had potential.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't...
He had potential. No smite.
Yeah. Now, saying Panker is almost like saying Ajax for main support, okay? Like, that's not heresy, that's Hennessy. That's crazy.
Oh, I think that's one of my favorite things you've ever said. That's not heresy, that's Hennessy. Put it on the fucking list. I'm putting that on the Yiska-isms. We haven't had any additions there. You're getting this live. I'm finding the Yiska-isms. Yep, there it is. That's my Google Doc.
What else is in there?
There's so many things I can't say on here. not cancelable, just not appropriate for live audiences.
Makes sense.
That's not heresy. That's heresy. it's funny. All right. Yeah. So Dynasty's gone. Tanks are a thing. Do we want to talk about Le Sserafim performing at BlizzCon and doing like a little collab with Overwatch?
So my emotion is 3 years too late, and it should have been an Overwatch League thing.
Yep. That's kind of how I feel about it as well. I'm a little bit more positive because it does feel it's mixed, because it does feel a little bit more plugged into the Overwatch scene. That is content that I think the Overwatch fans are going to engage with, and that's going to be successful. However, I don't know why it needs to be at BlizzCon.
I know. Does that make sense? Yeah, I think it's like a good act. Like, let's be honest.
Are WoW fans going to be into that? I don't know.
Maybe, but like, if you don't have much for Overwatch 2, this is great, okay? Like, and I don't know if that's the case, right?
Yeah. I'm right there with you. We're getting a new hero, which, you know, should be great for Overwatch 2. It's not like BlizzCon level stuff that you want. But.
Exactly. This is what you want to signal here, right? Like, that you are more open to these creator crossovers. It's just like this. It's crazy how sluggish this company is, right? Like, this is this is a 2018 idea for Epic Games, right? And only now are we seeing like these engagements. And like, I agree, it hits sort of like our
demographic,
and who also the type of people that would be interested in this. I just hope it feels like an organic, because like, just getting them in is only half the thing, right? Like, it also has to feel organic, and like, the song has to pop, and like, I don't know, it could also end very cringe. And this is, by the way, on based on zero links, but if they just have like only the virtual people on stage or something, or like on a screen, and the group is not even there, and everyone is just to like expected to just go wild by what, because they see the video, I think that would be disappointing. When you contrast that to KDA having both a virtual and a real world manifestation, so like the actual members or the actual artists of KDA, so the actual, you know, celebrities at this point, that in contrast, also, because it's also once again 2018, I think, when KDA popped, like, this needs to be at least KDA level to be acceptable. Probably, hopefully better. Initial KDA, I will say.
Yeah, it kind of needs to be.
And it won't be. Let's be honest, Joe. It won't be. It won't be.
I don't think it will be. I think it'll be a little bit underwhelming for people, but I still think it'll be successful. That I have always was a little bit like not thrilled with some of the live music performances that we've had in the past is that it never really tied into the games themselves. Like, obviously, DJ Khaled, so funny. But like, even with like Zed, it was just like Zed performs. It's like, well, like, what if there was like visuals that tied Zed's music to the game, or if there was like a collaboration with Zed in game, like what Riot did just like months later, weirdly enough. Like, it, they're always like half there and then they just miss.
Yeah, I feel that big time. By the way, like, I like the Vaulty tweet by John Spector, who tweeted, it's not DJ Khaled, but congrats to all my friends on the Overwatch team on an amazing collab here. And then exciting stuff.
Do you know how far-reaching the DJ Khaled Overwatch meme is?
There is something to be said as to actually be effective, because it was so awful that it memetically worked.
Yeah.
This it, basically what I'm saying is, Joe, bear with me.
Uh-huh. It was good.
DJ Khaled was the Just Stop Oil of Overwatch League. Okay.
I don't think I have the best context on that, but yeah,
you know, the guy said that,
yes, like, that like sprayed down the LAN, right, and everybody hated them for it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this man just sprayed down our LAN and everyone hated him for it. And then
he really did spray down our LAN, man. It was,
and then it became
rough,
like an internet meme. I'm not sure if that's the type of vibe you want to connect to your brand, but it sure carried.
It sure worked.
Yeah. I mean, we got known.
What's crazy, and the only reason why I like bring this up is because I was catching up on Critical Role, right? The D&D campaign. Yes, famously with like some of the Overwatch voices that, you know, some of the voice actors obviously are in Critical Role. But in like the most recent episode that they had, somebody made a DJ Khaled reference, and Matt Mercer, famously, you know, host and
right,
DM of Critical Role and Cassidy's voice actor, like has to like stop the moment and be like, I for whatever reason cannot get DJ Khaled at the Overwatch League out of my head, and like everybody gets a kick out of it. And I think his like wife even like quotes that he like did like the whole like weird shuffle, and everybody's like, oh, it was so bad. Like it was like a surreal experience,
yeah,
knowing that my first concert was also everybody else's equally. It was like a shared experience of just shit. So. It is crazy that it still lives to this day.
Wait, were you in the venue when that happened?
Yes.
Jesus Christ. What was it like?
It was a fucking library, bro. That shit was, you could hear a pin drop. You remember the kid? If you go back and actually watch the video, they cut to like a kid with like a what's the Cassidy skin where he's at the beach and he has like the squirt gun?
Right.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a kid like in that, like, again, like couldn't have been like maybe 10 years old, and he's in that cosplay, and it cuts to him and he's just blankly staring at the screen like, what?
Yeah.
Like that was the collective experience. Everybody that I was sitting with, you know who you are if you were there. It was funny and it was so hilarious even after the fact because it was so bad. It was so bad it was good.
Mm-hmm.
There was a point in time where and for everybody who remembers, I think we had a, or no, it wasn't that we had it, I think the Barclay Center was where we were, you know, where the finals were for season one and where he was performing. I think the arena had a sponsorship with Spotify. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I know that he, like, the arena or we had a sponsorship with Spotify. And then he was shouting out that like his music was being streamed now, like he was just releasing a record on iTunes. And it was just such like a, like, you don't know where you are. And then he physically like tried to like thank everybody for coming out, and he was so honored to be at this thing. Like verbatim, if you go back and watch the entire performance, he literally has to look down to remember where he is. He's like, I'm so grateful to be where I am today. Thank you, everybody. Like, he has no idea where the fuck he is. It was a fever dream of epic proportions. And yes, audio listeners, Eric has the weird shuffle insane that he does. He is a enigma, man.
That's insane.
All because,
like,
Bobby
before
K
I do that, you
to,
can have my search history, okay? Like, it's crazy.
Oh man, what a treat. I love this esport, man. It has brought me so many memories, including DJ Khaled robbing me of my concert virginity. Shame that.
You will never let that go. Like, I had Depeche.
No, bro, I want it back. Give it to me.
I had Depeche Mode, okay? You had DJ Khaled.
That's funny.
We're not the same.
No, we're not. We are not the same. All right. Enough with DJ Khaled. I have some hills for you to die on.
Right.
Eric, hit me with the first one.
What did I do?
We've got two for you. Hills to die on is our newest end segment of each show, where I bring up stuff that Yiska has said and we make him defend it. And sometimes he finds things that I've said, but I'm a fucking pred lord, so that's hard to do. If you remember anything, Or if you want Steven to discuss something, shoot it over and we can die on some hills.
Oh, this is where Elliot had a stroke or something.
Yeah, he
what happened?
Yeah. Your guys' video editor butchered this, but God bless.
Okay.
Here with Reinforce, the whole podcast episode was you guys giving hot takes. And you argued that the Soul Infernal, if played in NA,
mm-hmm.
would be a top three team. Would you like to defend that take with the hindsight of playoffs?
Top three team. Is that with Fix and Tact on?
I mean, I will give you as much as you need to try to
I think
have
it's
successful
still
argument.
Possible. Like, it's, I think, like, just from a player perspective.
Are you arguing, like, from, like, a competitive, like, practice? Like, they didn't have good practice, so, like,
I mean,
they
had
never,
shit
like,
practice all season, right?
Sure, but,
my
like,
point
when you
is,
look at the West.
No. Okay,
like,
that's the argument. The argument isn't that you put them in and they immediately win. My argument in this was if they acclimate towards the environment.
Agreed.
Then they would probably have the chance to be a top three team. Now, would I backpedal that and say top five? Top five, I'd feel much more comfortable.
Top five, I think I think that's feasible. Top three, it's like you have Boston, you've got Mayhem, you've got Houston, you've got Atlanta. It's like,
yeah, I think Houston, Atlanta is out of reach for the entire season.
Mayhem maybe early isn't with, no, that's,
but,
could maybe.
But Houston.
Pro-Am winners.
It's probably against Houston and Boston that they would have to. Yeah, it's rough, I think, but maybe it's hard to say. I think just like I specifically hold. Yeah, no, I think like everyone on that roster, like Mac, could have popped off with more input from everyone else, or rather, like from another environment. I think Zest specifically can definitely hold his own against the other flex DPS players in the league. MN3 would have to find consistency, but when he pops off, like his peaks are as high as anyone's. Skewed agreed. Looked okay to great for a while.
Yeah.
Keep in mind during that time, like we still had an argument if he was in the MVP discussion.
Sure.
I will say probably a little overrated in hindsight.
Yeah, in terms of MVP, for sure. Role star, probably the only actual role star from APAC, I feel like.
Yeah, probably. And if
okay, at support, to be fair.
Yeah, if that, because Fielder, Chio, Shu, Alok, and then you probably want Violet over Skewed in my mind.
Yeah.
Right, so, and then Fixer, honestly, like, had such an improved season before.
Oh, 100%.
I think, like, that's also where I already have to hard counter all the Andes of, like, oh, they went to an A and then they shit the bed. I grant you this for the midseason. I don't grant you this for playoffs. That, like, losing him this close to the playoffs is too big of a deal as to not value that into or factor that into their performance during the playoffs, hence why, like, I'd be, I'd not take that well if you were to discredit that opinion based on that. I'm fine to say that based on the midseason of Meta's performance.
Yeah, and there again, you know, they had to travel for playoffs. Right? Like, not only were they missing a support player that was kind of pivotal in some of their success in APAC. Also had to travel, and that cuts into practice time. That cuts into preparation time for a new patch. It was never really going to work. We'll always kind of be left wondering what if. And it is kind of an interesting thought experiment. I think we both agree that top three feels a little out of reach, even if you acclimate them immediately at the start of the season. You give them a pro-am performance and everything. Top three still out of reach. Top five feels way more accessible and probably feasible. I could see them at fifth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
I don't hate that.
Yeah,
Eric, give me the other one. This one's even funnier. Because I think I know where you're going to argue this, but we'll have to see. We'll have to see exactly which way he goes. But
oh, Jesus.
Way back in the day, way, way back, we had Yiska and Sideshow doing a debate show where they refute each other on points.
You know, this is a while ago episode. Because Sideshow still has hair.
Doesn't have a mustache right now. Very, very, very baby faced.
Yeah.
You guys were debating whether or not NOXL would underperform in Overwatch League Season 1, which you could say they did, but you could also say they didn't. So defend your take that I believe in this episode you were for the idea that they would underperform. Do you feel like NOXL underperformed in Season 1?
Okay, the as far as recall, the argument was the idea of them not playing Apex Season 4 was stupid. And, you know, they kept the team outside of it in order to prepare for Overwatch League. That was Luxury Watch Blue, right, at the time?
Yep.
And that would tank them. I thought already at the time, Sebiobi was washed. That take needed a season. I had take delay, if you remember the concept. But no, I think this is... To be fair, to give a little bit of insight into the behind the scenes, sometimes like we threw a concept at each other and like just said to the other person, can you remotely argue the other point in order to make it an interesting episode? And then someone else took the devil's advocate
the opposite
on.
End. Yeah.
Like there were definitely like opinions I wanted to get out where Sideshow had to be the one that to defend an opinion that he didn't personally hold, but it was just,
sure.
You know, for sophistry reason, it was just fun. To argue, but yeah, I think that's a fat L for sure. I don't think they underperformed at all. I think they were the best team in Season 1, and that in that take didn't. If I truly meant this, and I don't recall if I did or didn't, I feel like I recall feeling that it was very stupid to not place Apex Season 4.
Okay, yeah.
Then
is they dipped early to come and do pre-OWL stuff.
Yeah, which, like, why? You know, like...
I don't know.
What pre-OWL stuff? Like, London Spitfire played, or half of London Spitfire, or all of London Spitfire played...
Literally all of London
Spitfire. Apex Season 4, and...
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you had, maybe you would have won the season, LL. Can't disprove me. Whoever wins... Natural selection, L. Literally proven wrong by Darwin.
Actual Darwin marketplaced. Darwin placed, if you will.
Based. This was also all still right. In my artsy face, Joe. I'm not sure if you're aware, but like if you look at my camera, I have post-it notes above my couch.
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah,
and
I see that.
They just had like very esoteric concepts on them. Okay, like they would have like stuff like on there, like the element of irreducible rascality.
Oh and my then god! If I have to hear about that one more time,
and then I would have to like I'll just lie down, look at the ceiling, read them, think of a couple of ideas. I was much more creatively like productive. I also had much more interesting formative thoughts. I feel like I gotta at least get a little bit more towards that. Like freeness, like because I feel like I'm really caught in, you know, the structures that are and just like trying to churn out content and I'm not really innovating anywhere. And I also just feel like cognitively on rails. So that like the best, I think, honestly, during that time, I went for a lot of walks and now I go for a lot of runs and that really illustrates. You know, runs are for efficiency, competition. They're not for creativity and like novel truth finding or whatever, right?
Yep.
So, I definitely gotta incorporate like half and half. Maybe like every other day I go for a run, every other day I go for a walk. Metaphorically speaking, also in terms of the type of thought patterns I employ.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, no. A lot of novel ideas. A lot of Some of the best creative work definitely comes from when you're in a quiet place, not doing a ton, and you can let your kind of brain a little wander a little bit, walk with you in some ways. So definitely hear you there. But Yeah, those are some hills that we poked Yesuke to die on. I'm sure he'll find one eventually that I've missed. There's plenty of them. You just gotta look. If you fans, commenters, Timmies, Redditors, Yescorders, if you remember any historic takes, it doesn't have to be on a YouTube video. It can be in Yescord. Any fucking power posters out there, remember anything that we've said in Yescord? Feel free to clip it and send it to me. I'll get it on the show. Leave a comment, all that stuff. But yeah, hills to die on. Let us know if you like it also. Because we won't keep doing it if you don't like it. I can just shame him in DMs. We don't have to publicize it.
Nice.
That said, I
get shamed enough by you, Joe. Lord.
That's true. Double Lord. I need to get my lord title. I need to get my plot of land, my one-by-one plot in Scotland. Be a laird. Established titles. Sponsor us, please. Anything coming out for you?
Coming up. There's a bunch of content in the pipeline. Some novel stuff. Some juicy stuff. Of course, I'm keeping my finger on the pulse of the development around the vote. We'll see how that goes. But also, we're putting out content on some rumors I've heard in terms of like what kind of system changes we might see in the future. And then I also have resurrected an old series. I'm actually recycling my ideas from my
past.
From my past. And we're bringing the Essence of Heroes as a video format.
Okay.
And I sat down with a player that is a specialist for a hero, and the basic idea is to give a viewer an idea of what it feels like to play that hero very well and what kind of thoughts go through their mind. It's not necessarily only about like the little tricks, right? Like it's the antithetical point of being get quaked on. Like, you know, like the little techy techs. No, I'm not interested.
The little techs and like the little tips and the strats. It's like, what does it feel like to do something?
I'm not trying to teach you how to double juggle punch like on Winston primals. What I'm trying to convey is like, what kind of mindset should you have here? Right.
Right.
Like, should you be aware of
processes? Yeah.
What kind of emotional state should you have in that moment, right? Yeah. Is there a heightened sense of alertness, or can you chill because the neutral is playing itself based on the hero that you're playing or whatever?
Right.
Or like, how are you feeling whenever a different composition pops out and whatnot, right? There are some gameplay considerations and tips and tricks, but I feel like there's a lot of concrete stuff and not enough heuristics in terms of the guide content. And I sat down with one of the best players on that particular hero in Overwatch. And I think for a pilot episode, it's turned out much better than I anticipated. And I'm looking forward to that coming out.
Very cool. That's awesome. Yeah, it's definitely... that one always felt like it was you trying to... Not trying to, but like really flexing the creativity. I remember like some of the original ones having like very like... You put a lot of thought into like even the images and how they looked and like what they like. It was very all well, like very thought out, very thorough on your behalf. And it was definitely something that was a little underserved by the community, as things tend to be in this space.
Yeah, it was my in my mind, I wanted to, you know, put sugar to the medicine, which was like I wanted to sell the pro gamer product. And then how do you do that? You bring the personality closer. So how does the person relate to the hero that they're playing? And the people come for the tips and tricks, how to play that better from the best players in the world.
Right.
And in the process of doing that, they might find something out about the player or their achievements that hopefully transitions them into esports. That was always the idea behind Essence of Heroes. And yes, it's... Like it felt a little idealistic. It also only some of them did pretty well on the main subreddit. But I think now there's almost like a counter jerk aversion towards when you see pro player.
Yeah.
So like all the tips and tricks, I feel like, and that's fine. Like I'm not, like that's just how it is. I feel like there's almost a culture of non-improvement in the our Overwatch community where it's not about performance or performance improvement, and even guide content and tips and tricks don't do well. It's more about the ha-has and goofs and gaffs of this game, right?
Yeah. That's kind of what we're relegated to, sadly. That and 5K D.Va bombs, which I'm sure populate the front page still. Gotta love it. The World Cup is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been hitting the ground as hard as I possibly can to bring you some kind of content, some kind of supplemental content. As it stands today, I have quite a few yeses from a number of teams, teams including Spain, the UK, Canada, the USA, Brazil as well. A couple from Finland, so we will see what that looks like. But those should be coming out in the coming days and or weeks. I'm going to try to get everybody. Some of those are just kind of impossible. But we're going to try to get as many representatives ahead of the 2023 World Cup to try to prime us for, you know, possibly one of the last events. A lot of players have a lot of different meanings as to what this World Cup means to them. Put in the context of the health of competitive Overwatch. And this maybe being the last time they do it professionally. They have a lot of very interesting insights and feelings on what this event kind of means and stands for to them. So definitely fun to kind of get back to work spamming out in interviews. Those should be coming out sometime soon. Very cool. Very excited to get those out to you. So stay tuned for that.
Sweet.
All righty. I think we have a date tomorrow. Maybe we'll play a little Baldur's Gate. Maybe we'll make a little content, make a little love, get down tonight. Any other plans for you?
I'm still suffering from Tarkov. Maybe I'll dip my toes a little bit into Diablo. Otherwise, I'm chilling. I'm looking. Maybe I'm getting some time off soon because I'm still...
Cool.
It's getting harder to... I'm looking at the time... You know, I'm suffering from having too much holidays as a European, Joe.
truly suffering from success.
I booked off 2 weeks over Christmas, and I somehow only needed 6 days of holidays for that. So
great, yeah.
So now I still have 13 days of holiday left that I gotta get rid of until March, and so that's like 2.5 weeks. So we'll have to find where we can apply that somewhere sensible.
There you go.
Maybe post, after BlizzCon sometime.
That'd be a good time.
Yeah, we'll see.
A lot of looks there. A lot of probably a lot of details coming out. So wouldn't be terrible. Wouldn't be terrible to try to dodge it.
Sure.
All right. 319. We're out of here. We will see you next week. Possibly, maybe with a guest. I have some ideas that we're cooking. So stay tuned. 319. We're out of here.
Sweet.
Peace.